Oh, geez, that's awful. I think we're going to do that again. Hold on a second.
That was actually pretty funny.
Yeah, okay. Like, 10.
Okay, 10. Oh, yeah, you're looking at me. That means I'm supposed to.
Yes, yeah, you're supposed to say something now.
Okay, Chris, the topic we'll be discussing today is, when do you invite players to help you build the world?
Hello, and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman.
And I'm Andy Rao.
Andy, the AADL GameCon approaches. We are going to both be at this con coming up in about a week and a half.
Yes, in fact, by the time you, dear listeners, are hearing this, it will be just a few days away.
Oh, yes. Yeah, good point. I forget that sometimes we record these ahead of time. Yeah. Yeah,
so well, it's because usually we don't, but
yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, that is the Saturday, April 13th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the downtown branch of the Ann Arbor District Library. If you're in Southeast Michigan, it is definitely worth coming out to. I think it's going to be a really good event. So Andy and I will both be on a panel there. You can come hear us talk if you want to. It's called GM Like a Pro. We'll be on that panel with Phil Cameron. And then a handful of other luminaries of the Roll for Topic community are also running games at this thing too. And then the actual stars, though, Avery Alder is going to be there. I'm super excited for her talk. She's going to be talking about politicizing and queering game dynamics, which is just like, it's such an important topic, and I think it'll be a really good talk and really entertaining. Avery is, of course, the author of The Quiet Year, which I think we talk about quite a bit on this.
Yeah, we are big fans.
Yeah, super big fans. So yeah, that's super exciting. And then Kevin Simby, is it Symbieta?
Yes, Palladium. Is he going to be there?
Yeah, he's going to be there. I'm talking on a panel about world building for gamers, along with Jim Hall and Avery Alder as well. So it should be a really good convention. There's a whole bunch of stuff. You can go ahead and Google it, or go to aadl.org/gamecon to get more details.
So, yeah, and you know, I would go so far. I won't tell you the geographic range at which you're sort of obligated to attend, but I would say even northern Ohio, you should consider making the trip.
Yeah. And for sure. And if you see us, again, I think we mentioned on the last episode too, please come over and say hi. We'd love to chat and say hi to you. So
yeah, that's going to be fun. Chris, do you think we'll make it through our panel discussion without mentioning Dark Souls or Final Fantasy?
That is a super good question. We should probably have a list of topics we're not allowed to talk about. And yes. Phil, if you're listening to this, Phil, you have to keep us too. Keep us on track.
What we need is a bingo card.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, I think that does it for our self-promotion. So I wanted to ask you, Andy, it's been probably a couple times or a couple episodes since we've talked about this. What have you been reading lately?
Yeah, well, so my reading lately has been mostly nonfiction. That's not super relevant to this podcast. I guess the one that's a little bit relevant is I've been, after years of kind of eyeing it, I have started my way through the S.T. Joshi's 1600 page biography of H.P. Lovecraft.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. So it's like, as I know what grades Lovecraft got on his middle school tests, that sort of thing. It's that level of detail. So that's been fun just because an awful lot of my gaming is Cthulhu influenced.
I have a question. Like, what, like, how famous do you have to be to justify 1600 pages?
So that's a good question. So here's what I've been sort of circling around as I've read this. This is more detail than you need to really, get a picture of somebody. However, like, so this to me feels like somebody did the groundwork to go out and read, well, I mean, Lovecraft wrote thousands and thousands of letters over his life, and he published in a zillion different, like, obscure little niche things. Someone did the work to read all those letters and track down all the names and make all the dates work.
Oh, wow.
And that's what this 1600 page thing is. So this is like, now that we have this, somebody else can come along and maybe work out some like themes or observations. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really a huge data dump. And it's not that the author doesn't, you know, apply editorial kind of judgment and call out themes. He certainly mm-hmm. does. However, this does really feel to me like a sort of like Bible of Lovecraft's life that other authors can use to maybe write shorter and more narrowly focused like works or opinions about Lovecraft.
That's fascinating. Yeah. So are you going to, have you picked up anything from it that you might apply to gaming in some way? I mean, obviously you only write 1,000 pages per NPC, you know, for your personal notes.
I cap out at 1,000 pages. Yeah. Well, so, I mean, I'm only into his like late teenage years. So, and he hasn't really started writing the weird stories that would make him famous, but not, this isn't something that I will apply to at the table, but more an insight into kind of how hobby communities work. And so Lovecraft was a hugely active participant in what at the time was called like amateur journalism or amateur writing.
Interesting.
Like, so it basically means he wrote for, edited, and argued about like what we would call zines or like fan journals.
Yeah.
And he took them really seriously at the same time he recognized they were amateur efforts, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's an idea I've had circling around in my head about this like role-playing hobby for quite a while, just what its real strengths and value are. Like there's so much creativity in the really amateur fringes of this hobby, and you know, more power to the Wizards of the Coasts and the Paizos and stuff that are putting out these slick full color hardcovers, but there is just an energy in, and I imagine any kind of creative niche hobby, there's just enormous energy in the margins mm-hmm. of that hobby. You know, when the OGL fiasco was happening last year, I just thought about, you know, there's this, it's commonly called like the D20 bubble or something that happened in like the early 2000s when the OGL came out. Suddenly everyone could write a D&D thing. And it quickly became apparent that like, you know, 90% of it was not great in quality, right? And there was this huge flood of material. But I don't look at that with scorn or like mm-hmm. derision at all. Like, yeah. You know, if it, I think it's something to be celebrated, and I don't know. So I guess seeing how Lovecraft, I mean, he had an awareness of what he was doing. He knew that the journals and zines he was doing were not producing like world-changing literature, but that didn't mean he didn't take it seriously, and he took it really seriously. So I don't know. I guess I'm kind of rambling here, but, you know, role-playing is like it's a hobby. It's worth having a sense of humor about and relegating it to the appropriate place in your life. But it's also worth putting in the energy to kind of do it well and take it seriously within its own context.
Yeah. So. Oh, no, totally. Yeah. There is, kind of like a couple related thoughts. I mean, I think you're right on about like the creativity that sort of happens on the fringes of like the established media. I think there's established media or just like anything where there's like a kind of a professional class that can do something. And then there's like the amateur class that can like kind of also participate in it. Right. And they almost end up being different things sort of in the same space. Right. Like, I mean, we have a podcast, right? Like we don't make our living from this podcast, right? Like there's, you know, but I still think it's enjoyable and worthwhile and stuff like that, like without having the veneer of like, we're drawing a salary from it or you know, whatever like that. Like there's still something there. Yeah. But we also take it seriously. I don't know. I'm not even going to say anything because I don't want to like, you know, say something against other podcasts about how they approach it and stuff. But like, it's something that's important to us, you know, so we take it a little bit seriously.
Yeah. There is this tendency I've noticed among this community we're part of to kind of sneer at our own hobby a little bit, you know, like you hear this, it's good natured sneering, but this like, oh, it's just a dumb debate about elf games, you know, like that sort of thing. And yeah, like there's certainly a point to be made, you know, compared to real situations in the world, this is like minor stuff, but you know, but we are in a hobby about elf games. Mm-hmm. Let's, you know, let's, it doesn't help anyone if you keep like a buffer of irony between you and mm-hmm. the thing you're spending all your time on.
Yeah. Yeah. I was having a conversation with John and Corey a little bit about this. Like, so we, this is now going to be the third episode in a row, I think, where we mentioned Flash Gordon, but I was trying to like articulate to him, like the Flash Gordon from 1980 is like pure camp. Like it is over the top camp. It's like ridiculous. At the same time, I like it.
Yeah.
Right. And there's like this tension there of like, this is ridiculous. Like, but I also really like it and I'm super into it at the same time. And I think that tension for me is like, you know, that's the RPG hobby is like full of that. Right. Too.
Yeah.
But like, I think there's nothing wrong with like, I think holding those two ideas in your head at the same time, like understanding that like, yes, this is escapism. Like, yes, elves don't actually exist. But also I like really want to debate the difference between hill elves and tree elves and like, you know, whatever like that. And like, we can be earnest about those things and that's okay. Right.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, but we've gone like fully off the path from, from Lovecraft at this point.
Yeah, no, that's, and that's fine. Yeah. So why don't we move into our topic? So just to remind us, our topic was, when do you invite players kind of into the process of creating your world mm-hmm. or your setting or whatever you want to call it. And that is an interesting question. First of all, let's start out. Do you know who added this to the table?
I think I added this one.
You added this. So you're responsible. You're responsible for this terrible question.
Okay. Yes. So go off.
Well, so let me start this one out. Let me start this one out with, so I have been reading Deathmatch Island. It's mm-hmm. an RPG, was kickstarted recently found its way to my mailbox. So I've been reading it, and this is a game that I guess I should say, if you want to experience Deathmatch Island, I'm not going to quote spoil anything about it, but if you want to experience it completely blind, maybe skip ahead a couple minutes here.
Okay. I'm going to skip ahead a couple minutes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I'll just talk to myself for a while. And so Deathmatch Island is a game that has no canonical like mystery or explanation or setting.
Okay.
It's a setup for, it has just enough of the skeleton of like a setup, like you're on this island and it's like a deathmatchy Fortnite type of situation. It has no canonical backstory. There's no chapter that's like what's really going on mm-hmm. Or anything like that. And although a part of the game is figuring out what is really going on behind this deathmatch setup, it's entirely generated at the table by the players.
Oh,
okay. And so there is no mystery that the GM knows that you, the player, don't, that you can figure out.
Mm-hmm.
And I struggle with this. Mm-hmm. This is interesting. This is fun. It's also something I don't know how I feel about it.
Yeah. Are you rolling like a bunch of dice on tables to determine that? Or are you just collaboratively like being like, well, who's our big villain behind all this?
So I'm going to egregiously simplify mm-hmm. a somewhat more nuanced process, but mm-hmm. basically at different stages in the game, the players sort of propose kind of elements of what they think is going on. Mm. So this is players kind of answering the question of like, you know, what's the mystery behind this? Like, what's the Lost style mystery behind this island that doesn't canonically exist, but players periodically will kind of propose things that they think are a part of what's going on. And then the GM is encouraged mechanically and narratively to build on the things that the player has fed him or her. So if the players are really leaning into an explanation that this Deathmatch Island is some sort of weird political experiment, mm-hmm. there are ways for them to indicate that. I mean, like literal boxes to check on the character sheet.
Okay.
And then the GM looks at those and riffs on them, as well as uses those things mechanically to like add elements that I don't want to say in like cement those ideas, but maybe push those ideas and see where how the group will explore them or expand them as they go along. So there's an example of a game. I don't want this to be just the Deathmatch Island episode. There's an example of a game that like that there is almost no world at all until the players start providing you with the very basic facts about it. So yeah.
And you've played that, right?
I played a one shot of that run by Matt Wilson. It was super fun. We played long enough to enter in our first sort of tentative guesses about what was going on, but not long enough. It was just a one shot. So you need a couple of sessions for this to really play out.
Yeah. That's interesting. So you enjoyed it as a player, but it sounds like as a GM, you have some trepidation about it.
In some ways, it's almost the opposite. I don't know if I loved it as a player.
Okay.
As a GM, I love it because I love harnessing the creativity at the table and recognizing that as a group, if you have four or five people at the table, that's a lot of creativity. And why would you ever not want to just tap into that and channel it to make this whole experience more interesting for everyone, right? Like, because this group will come up with stuff that's way more interesting than me, a single person, reliant heavily on my own interests and my own, reading and viewing history and stuff like that to come up with ideas. So as a GM, I love it. And also, I think as a GM, it's fun to be able to, like, there's a certain enthusiasm that's implicit with a player contributing a setting element, right? Whether it's through Deathmatch Island or just asking a player, to supply a little detail or something about the world that you're exploring.
Yeah.
I think when people do that, I think they're giving you, the GM, a gift, a huge gift of saying, this is a thing I'm interested in or that I find compelling. It's a wonderful gift as a GM. I was going to say, as a player, I actually find it less satisfying because it's kind of like that experience of watching like Lost and realizing that after a few seasons in, that there is no mystery, that it's all just smoke and mirrors to keep me watching from episode to episode. You know what I mean? I think most people would agree that that is a little dissatisfying to learn that there wasn't ever really a plan, right? Battlestar Galactica, the remake, a show I really like, but it has this problem too. You know, it had this, there was a sense, there's this idea that the show explicitly stated in the opening credits.
Very much so, yeah.
Like there is a truth to be discovered,
yes.
That if you followed the clues and paid attention, you could figure out the true reality of what was going on. And that was not the case.
Yeah.
And as a viewer, I think that's really dissatisfying. I have echoes of that feeling when I feel like in like a Deathmatch Island thing, I'm not here to play a game that I explore an idea that I came up with. I'm here to crack the puzzle of something that's mysterious to me. Okay, there's my huge monologue. I'm going to stop talking.
That was really good. I will start with a minor thing just to make you feel bad. Lost is 20 years old as of this year.
No, so... Lost stopped. The season finale was like 3 years ago, right? Yeah. And I will not hear any more about this.
And then I'm not even going to look up when Battlestar Galactica was, but I'm pretty sure it's also about the same.
Yeah. Also about 2 years ago. Okay.
Yeah, I think you are hitting on something, and this is something that I wanted to bring up too, of like there is an element of like thankfulness when the GM says like, please add to the scene, or like, when you're the GM, like as a player, so from the player side of it, like, oh cool, like thank you, like I get to contribute to this, but then also like, but did you not have the answer? Yeah, is like, is that tension. tension there. I think for me, it kind of comes down to like what mode of play you're in for the game that you're playing. So like, I think there's very much games that, you know, like that I've run where like, I want there to be more control. So it is like the players are discovering something, right? Like, so they're discovering a world or interacting with a world that already exists. And then there are other times where it's very much like, oh, but like let's build this together. I think, you know, and those are just different like sort of modes of storytelling. I think the friction that you're getting at is like, if you come to the table expecting the like the D&D or like the, you know, your GM has the 1600 page backstory for every NPC. And then you get there and it's like, oh, actually, like I was thinking that we could play the quiet year and like build this thing together. Like, I think that can be really deflating in some ways as a player. Although like, but I think if you're ready for it, it's like, this is exactly what I want to do. Like, so your description of Deathmatch Island, like, I think to me, that sounds fun on both sides, but I also like, there's also this tension in me, like, but I think it'd also be really cool to kind of come up with my own concept and have this thing that can kind of like slowly be revealed to them, you know, over the course of the game or the session or whatever. Right. Like, cause I think like, yeah, just to your point of like there being some sort of central mystery that is sort of there, like that's going to change. That'll change a lot of stuff on how you run the game too. Right. Like, and if players feel like that at any point, they can kind of interject a new reality into the world that you're building, like, I mean, that's great. But like, if that's not the sort of story you're telling, I think that can be really like, that can be grating too. Cause I've definitely had players try to, like when I'm running a game, like a D&D like dungeon or something, and players try to invent some sort of new feature of the dungeon. You're like, no, like we can't really do that. Like, you know, cause you're trying to do that for a mechanical advantage or, you know, something like that. And it's not even really like serving the story at that point. It's just like, well, I want to be able to do this other thing. And it's like, well, okay, but you know, like that wasn't part of the scene, the scene until you try to invent it.
I truly think that the rise in the last, you know, whatever, 15, 20 years of inviting the players into that creative act of shaping the setting, I really think it's a wonderful thing. And like, I hope my earlier rant didn't suggest that I really dislike this, but I do need it to be, to me, I need it to be an interesting experience that I explore every now and then, but not always. Like, I grew up, and maybe you did too, my default kind of picture of how the player relates to the setting, especially in something like a Deathmatch Island, where you're in a mysterious location, you have little knowledge. It's like very Myst-like. You know, Myst is like, to me, the ultimate example of there is a truth, and the entire experience of playing this game is trying to map out the boundaries of that truth and establish what the truth is. There is a hard-coded reality behind Myst, and you do not shape that. I guess I haven't played all the Myst games, but at least the ones I did play, you know, you're not contributing to it. You are being tested by it. You're attacking it. You're trying to decipher it. So to me, that is just kind of my default way I approach the idea of a world created by one person that is explored by other people. And I realize that is not the only way to understand how settings and characters relate. But it is my default. So it's kind of my bias, I guess.
Yeah. Myst is a really good example, I think, of a game where, could you imagine if Myst had like a level creator, like attached to it, right? Or it's laughable to think about, right? Like you laugh. Cause it's like, why would you want that? Cause like the whole point of it is there's so much intention behind every possible, even angle that you're looking at the world in. All right. And like, yeah, I mean the subsequent games, which I played most of them, it's the same thing, right? Like the whole conceit of that is that there is this world, there is a mystery, you're trying to discover what's going on. And like, yeah, like you don't have any influence on it. Like, right. Like your only influence is solving the puzzles and then sort of seeing what happens from there. I'm like, that's deeply enjoyable, right? It's yeah. like, you know, reading a book is the same way. Like, choose your own adventures are fun now and then, but like also just sitting down and reading a novel is like, you know, there's a reason we all do it all the time, you know, and it's not because we're just mad and waiting for like, when's the author going to give me the blank lines to fill in
yeah.
my little portion of the story. Yeah. And I think that is somewhat like, that's what I grew up with thinking about, like what stories were too. Yeah. And I do think you're right that like, it's yeah. in the past 10 or 15 years in gaming, like there is just that more like openness to sort of where narrative control mm-hmm. is going. Yeah. And I think like that's in general, like a really, I think that's a good thing. I don't think I've seen exactly how it plays out in a system where there is a tight story, right? Like how do you do that together? Yeah, I think so. I'm playing in the Enemy Within campaign that Matt Wilson is running, and he's attempting a few things that I think are really cool as far as doing some collaborative like storytelling. And I know it's not like it's hard. Like it's very different, right? Like he's asking us some like tough questions about some specific story beats, and then he's going to take that and integrate it into the rest of the story that he's telling. But the whole game isn't that, right? Like there's other parts of it that it's just like we are interacting with the world, that, you know, the world is moving on kind of without us. And like, you know, if we decide to dilly dally, like bad stuff is going to happen and we're not going to be there to stop it as adventurers. And like, that is also really exciting, right? Like,
yeah,
I think there's a tendency if you're playing a game where the narrative control is sort of shared amongst everybody, I think there's a tendency to like also go a little bit easier on either mechanical complexity or like the threat
level yep.
of the system as well. Because if you as the player have control sort of over what happens in the story, you can like make sure that you're not going to die. Right. Like a total party kill is probably going to be a little bit more rare, I would guess, in a game where the GM is constantly asking the players to help sort of build the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless all the players sort of collectively agree, like, yes, GM, like, let's find a way to have us all go out in a blaze of glory at the same time.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot about how unsatisfying, I mean, I've been talking about uncovering the truth as if it's like always a really rewarding experience. Mm-hmm. But sometimes creators' own explanations for things, their truth isn't as good as what you had in mind, right?
Yes,
and
yes,
like
true,
I'm trying so hard not to you know where I'm going with this.
I'll give you an example.
Yes.
I hated the ending to Ready Player One.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think you were the recipient of probably multiple emails about my ire for how that book wrapped up, even though I enjoyed parts of it. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But like that's a really good point. Like, yeah, sometimes you read something or you interact with something, and you're like, oh, like that's not that's not the solution I wanted.
Yeah. And you know, there's this you know, it's a bit of a gamble. It's a gamble when you set up a situation where there's a established truth that the author or the creator, the GM knows, and that, mm-hmm. and that the others don't, you know, there's a gamble that will be a satisfying truth. Right. And like, yeah. we can all point to examples of something where that was not the case, or whatever you had in your mind was significantly better than whatever mm-hmm. the creator did. And, you know, that's a problem. You know, that's a problem. People are, that makes people bitter, right? Like mm-hmm. people were really mad about like Lost's yeah. ending and yeah. you know whatnot, and you know, it does seem like an obvious solution is to like democratize the like establishment of truths a little bit.
Yes,
so
well, yeah.
my only other thought is just that like this, I do feel like this is a deeper human thing than just a gaming thing, right? And I'm not going to go anywhere weird with this, but like,
okay.
I mean, this is like the question of like, of this is a question at the heart of like your religious beliefs, mm-hmm. and like this just question of like, is it more compelling to you that there's like a set in stone under like reality to explore? Is it more compelling for you that you kind of create your own kind of reality through exploring and interacting with the universe around you? You know, I realize that's kind of a stretch, but I think that's why this is like an interesting thing in the specific context of games, because it asks us like, what manner of exploring our way towards truth is satisfying, right? Mm-hmm. Is compelling on like a personal, like emotional level. And yeah. I think people answer that differently, and that's why there's your Deathmatch Islands, and that's why there's your whatever, your Temple of Elemental Evil, where that's just, here's the written word and you interact with it, you know?
Yeah, that is that's a metaphysical place to sort of go with this. I like that a lot. I mean, I think you are right on. I think in some ways the games and the stories we're attracted to, I think do sort of get at sort of the root of like call it emotional or spiritual, like whatever you want, of like, yeah, of what we're sort of searching for. Yeah, which is why, like, I don't know. Yeah, I think that also might be why we can have such strong reactions to styles of play.
Yes, yes. And people do, there are people on the internet that really, really hate one of these types of game. And I'm not gonna dignify some of these by pointing out, but you know, it does, people do react strongly.
Yeah, and I think we in general on like our podcast and the people that we hang out with sort of take like a broader view of like, hey, like whatever you're into is sort of okay. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, and I will play different styles of games and stuff, but I think like, yeah, you're really onto something there. Like when it gets down to it, like there are for sure styles of play that I definitely am going to gravitate towards. And there's probably more of an overlap with like my mental state, like in life with like what yes. I'm enjoying at the time. Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we need to wrap up here. Any closing thoughts, Chris, or do you want to move into our outro?
No, let's move straight into it, because I know you gotta run to a meeting. But yeah, so this has been Roll for Topic. Thank you so much for listening. Again, come check us out at the AADL Game Con if you can make it. Yeah, otherwise, thanks so much for listening. We are part of the Roll for Media Podcasting Network. Our sister show, The Splat Book, with John Corey and Kyle Latino, is great. You should go check them out at thesplatbook.com. I think that's it for us.
Yeah. Nope. I hope to see you guys, hope to see you all listeners, shortly at GameCon. So.
Yeah, cool. All right. Well, I've been Chris Halsman.
I've been Andy Rowe.
Remember, if your players are having fun, you're a great GM.